Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Kim Holderness.
And I'm Penn Holderness, and welcome to the Holderness Family Podcast.
Penn, I'm happy for you.
Are you really?
I am.
And that's today's podcast, which we should just title, Are You Really?
Are You Really? No. Today's episode, I'm telling you, you're going to learn things you can do today that will make you a happier person.
Today.
Scientifically proven make you happier.
It is fascinating.
But first, our book, ADHD is Awesome, is available for pre-order now.
Yeah, we are so excited, and we're going to have some special podcasts diving into the topic very soon. But to pre-order the book, ADHD is Awesome, you go to ADHDisAwesomeBook.com. I think, like, honestly, you're going to like it if you have ADHD, if you live with someone with ADHD, if you're just curious about ADHD, if you think you might have ADHD.
Or if you just like the cover and you think it's pretty.
Or if you just like the cover.
We need to work on our pitch here, but we're excited about this.
What do you mean? That was pretty good.
Okay. Anyway. To the show. I don't know about you, but when I can name an emotion, if there's a name for it, I feel like I can understand it better. And I saw this bumper sticker one time, and it triggered this obsession of mine. The bumper sticker simply said, I hope something good happens to you today. And I was like, and it made me feel so good that there's this stranger who wanted something good to happen to me. The emotion is called Freudenfreude. And it's derived from a combination of German words that simply means finding joy in other people's joy. And let me tell you, I first found that in Brené Brown's book, Atlas of the Heart. She writes about Freudenfreude. And I said, that's it. Finding joy in other people's happiness. And I've been obsessed with this. It's probably also important to understand its most famous counterpart.
Has anyone watched Avenue Q?
Oh,
anybody else? Just you. So great. If you haven't, I don't think it's on Broadway anymore, but it's sort of like the Muppet Show, but rated R. Mm-hmm. And they did a song called Schadenfreude. And basically, it's taking pleasure from the pain of others. So let's listen to the song really quickly, can
we? Let's listen to a little clip.
Okay.
Down and out and feeling really crappy.
I'll see.
And when I see how sad you are, it sort of makes me happy.
Happy.
It's Schadenfreude, making me feel glad that I'm not you.
That's not very nice, Gary.
I remember sitting in the audience watching Avenue Q, and that song came up. I had never heard the term Schadenfreude before. And everybody, I had tears in my eyes. I was laughing so hard because everybody has felt that emotion.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, in benign circumstances. Like, I think in every culture on every continent, it's okay to laugh when a kid is about to swing a bat at a t-ball and he backswings and he hits his dad in the nuts. Like, just for some reason, everyone, every country, everyone
laughs. It's universally
laughs.
Funny.
Even the dad. You see the dad occasionally laughing like, oh yeah, you got me, son.
And so I understand the emotion, but I don't like how I feel when I feel it.
You're talking about not the benign types, but it does work its way into envy, and the behavior when it comes to ambition. Yes, like it does. I don't mind laughing at the t-ball, but I don't like when I feel like sometimes I am rooting for other people to not do as well as I am.
Has there been a time?
Yeah, I mean, okay, I'll be honest. So let's start with this. So the benign Schadenfreude for me is I just love it when Duke basketball loses.
You and my son.
Right. He's picked up on this as well. I've had to be careful with him to like not make this super petty, but I for the rest of my life, if Duke basketball loses a game, I'm going to be okay with it because I'm such a UNC fan. And every Duke fan that I know feels the exact same way about UNC, so I'm okay. But then also, when I was in high school, I will admit, like I had this mindset where I was very ambitious and I wanted to be the best student in my class. I wanted to be the valedictorian. Mm-hmm. And for that reason, like, how do you become the valedictorian? What's the definition of that? You're the best.
Right.
Which means the other people around you can't be as good as you. Which means.
So you celebrate when they got a C.
Yes. Or even like if I got a 99 and they got a 93. Like it just became, and I'm not proud of this. I don't think it made me a very good person, but I bet I'm not alone. Yeah. When it comes to the way that things are in high school, I will say that when I got to college and I let that go, I was a much happier person. We'll talk about more of that in the podcast when we talk to Dr. Chambliss. What about you?
I think that I am it's a surprise to me to find out that I was a competitive person. I honestly didn't think I was a competitive person until we got on the Amazing Race. Yeah. And I would cry when we came in third place on a leg. We'd go back to our hotel and I was just so pissed off. And everybody else was like, ooh, we made it to the next round, high five. And I was like, this is not good enough. So having that lens to look back on my life, I can now see many clear moments when that unnecessary competitive nature turned me internally into a big old B.
Speaking of that, is it not interesting that a lot of the most popular shows on television and a lot of the most popular places people go, especially back when we were growing up, like Survivor and Amazing Race, are based on the most important moment in the episode, which isn't really when somebody wins.
It's right? Who loses.
It's who loses. That's the climax. The climax isn't the person who finishes first. That's almost like a throwaway. It's who loses.
And when I read Brené Brown's Atlas of the Heart, it's a wonderful book, and it puts names on hundreds of emotions that we all feel. And again, I love a name. So we understand Schadenfreude and how that comes naturally. But this Freudenfreude, am I saying it right?
Freudenfreude,
it's finding joy in other people's joy, sharing people's joy. And I read that a couple of years ago. And since then I've been obsessed. Like, I need more of that. I need more joy. It's been described as positive empathy. And I have been looking for it. And I've been looking for people who support that. So I think I've done a pretty good job of cultivating women in my life specifically, who we hype each other up, even on the tiniest things. But I will tell you, through that lens, I have lost some friends. I'm just being vulnerable here. My kid got cut from a team, and then the team he didn't make lost in a tournament that next weekend. And I didn't say anything out loud, but I was like, that'll show you. That's a terrible thing. That's terrible and awful. And I hated that I felt that way. But in personal relationships, I was very close to a person, and this person, we were in almost daily contact, and we really bonded over when things were hard, and our relationship was sort of built on this, like, raising kids and the hard parts of marriages, and we sort of commiserated, because misery loves company, over the bad things, and so our conversations were over things. They were more natural for me to complain, which I, again, didn't love. So when we got on the Amazing Race, there was not even a mention. So it kind of went on social media that we were going to be on this TV show. And this never, it was as if, and I didn't want to bring it up. And I didn't want to be the person that said, hey, did you see this thing we posted? We're going to be on this TV show. And it I just thought, well, okay, maybe this person doesn't want to make a big deal and they just want it to be normal. And so I didn't bring it up. And I'm like, oh, this is your ego. You need to get over it. I'm talking the entire season airs. We win the show. And there was never, ever a mention. And I don't need people in my life to watch the TV show. I don't need people to watch it. That's fine. But if we're close enough that we are on a daily text thing and there's not even an acknowledgement of something that was very joyful in my life, I struggled with that. And then it became obvious that this person liked me better when I was struggling.
My journey with Schadenfreude lately, first of all, I think with The Amazing Race, I did have a couple of people who I don't know that they were genuinely happy. And I think that does test the limits of envy in a relationship, because you get to go on national TV and then you win $1 million. Like that's a pretty unbelievable thing that happens.
Yeah.
So if there is a bit of Schadenfreude, which I think we've both admitted,
we participated.
We have ourselves.
Yes.
That can be a tough one, right?
That's a tough one.
For me, you and I, we came up working in television, and any sort of industry, probably not just local TV or network TV, it's all about working your way up. Because your first job barely pays the bills.
Right.
And the only way that you work your way up is getting promoted. And a lot of times, the only way that you get promoted is if someone ahead of you is not doing well. So there is a bit, and I want to ask Dr. Chambliss about this, in ambition, like the end goal, to get to a point where you can provide for a family, where it's sometimes in that mindset, it's sort of part of it, right? I think everyone participates in this. In order to get to where I have to be, I have to improve, I have to get better. And sometimes that comes at the expense of others. So is that a natural part of living life? I hope that the answer is no, and there's a way to get around it. But I'm just being as open and honest as I can about this. When I like getting promoted.
Well, like, I know.
Right?
And
so, but there's something on the other side of the equation all the time.
Here's why it's important to share in other people's joy.
Yeah.
There have been studies, and Dr. Chambliss, who we're about to introduce an interview, she has done them, that show that sharing in other people's joy, this emotion, can improve your own life satisfaction. It can boost your resilience, and it can help build skills for dealing with conflict. It can create community and connection in people's lives. And aren't we all just looking for that connection? It can make you happier. So why are we not doing it as much as we need? So today we're going to learn about the benefits of Schadenfreude. We're going to learn how to practice more, how to put this into practice, and then how to cultivate this emotion of sharing in other people's joys in our kids and in their mindsets.
So let's bring in our guest. Dr. Catherine Chambliss is a professor of psychology. She has taught at Ursinus College since 1979. She was chair of the psychology department for over 25 years. She studied at the University of Miami. She's published and presented over 300 research papers on a broad range of topics related to her discipline. Dr. Chambliss enjoys collaborating with students on research projects related to mental health, substance abuse, and interpersonal relationships. She has received the Lindbach Teaching Award and the Laughlin Professional Achievement Award. She is widely credited with coining the phrase Schadenfreude. Welcome to the show, Dr. Chambliss.
It's wonderful to be here.
I had some, by the way, like we just read your bio, but I wanted to tell you, I found out the correct way to pronounce Ursinus.
Yeah, you got it.
By doing a deep dive on the internet about Ursinus College. And there was a video about the guy who plays the bear mascot. And I went down a little bit of a rabbit hole on him. He never actually said the name of the college. So I had to go to another one. Anyway, long story. It looks like a lovely university.
It's the best.
Yeah.
So you've actually studied this emotion of, we're going to call it, it's Schadenfreude. Is that my saying it correct?
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Tell me, why did you look into this? Why did you want to study it?
I'm both a clinician and a researcher. And so for years, I've been trying to help people who were depressed. And for almost 50 years now, we've known that people who are depressed have a distinctive way of reacting to their own successes and failures. They have a tendency when they fail, for example, to use what we call the three P's. They go personal, permanent and pervasive. And what that ends up doing is magnifying the impact of any setback or failure. So if they get a bad grade on an exam, instead of saying, well, maybe it was an unusually hard exam, or maybe I didn't study for it right, they'll instead conclude that they're stupid. They tend also with successes to do exactly the opposite. They do things that minimize their impact. So if they do really well on an exam, oh, they'll dismiss it as saying, well, it's just a super easy exam. Everybody probably did well. So anyway, so we knew that people with depression experience their own successes and failures in ways that are distinctive and problematic. And so that got us to thinking about the possibility that maybe people with depression also respond in unusual ways to other people's successes and failures. So that was part of what got me interested in thinking about both Schadenfreude and Freudenfreude as it relates to depression. Another thing, for 36 years, I worked as a group therapist. And in all those years, I was constantly trying to help patients support one another, to be cheerleaders for one another, to support each other's recovery and advances and successes. And time and again, I was frustrated because not only was it hard to get a lot of these patients to cheer each other on, they actually often ended up sabotaging one another.
Oh, no.
And that got me so frustrated because we worked so hard to get somebody ready for discharge. And another group member would say something that would be colossally undermining. And I would just throw up my hands and say, oh, I don't understand this. And so that got me also really thinking about whether when people are depressed and struggling with other mental health issues, does that end up really skewing the way that they respond to other people's successes and failures? And when you have really big problems, does that throw off the normal balance between caring and competing that people experience? I was fortunate enough to have parents who exuded constant Freudenfreude. I could always count on them to amplify my successes and to show with their faces beaming how happy they were when I tried hard and succeeded. And in comparison, I had some friends, including some good friends, who at times just were colossally disappointing to me.
Yeah.
When I might bring them a little victory, and instead of responding in a positive way, they almost seemed bent on bursting my balloon.
Yeah.
They'd almost find some little flaw in the thing that took me down a notch. You know what I mean? It's like the friend who you come and you say, I won the lottery. And they say, oh, I hear you're probably going to pay it all back in taxes.
Interesting you said that.
We will be right back. Don't go anywhere.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and Talkspace, the leading virtual therapy provider, is encouraging people to talk it out in therapy.
Opening up to a therapist might feel uncomfortable, cathartic, exhausting, or even exhilarating. But one thing's for certain, if you keep talking or texting with a licensed therapist, you will gain insights and uncover truths that you can only find in therapy.
Get those personal breakthroughs and judgment-free support by signing up for Talkspace.
At Talkspace.com, you can sign up online and get a personalized match with a provider that's right for you, typically within 48 hours.
There's no need to commute to appointments, miss time at work, or line up childcare in order to attend sessions. It's mental health care made easy.
Talkspace is also affordable and in-network with most major insurers.
To celebrate May, Mental Health Awareness Month, and the power of talking it out in therapy, Talkspace is offering every listener of this podcast $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com/Holderness.
To match with a licensed therapist today, go to Talkspace.com/Holderness to get $80 off your first month with code SPACE80. And to show your support for the show.
That's Talkspace.com/Holderness with code SPACE80.
Well, before we get to trying to explain why all this happens, can you tell us about the research and the trial that you had, and as simply as you can, what you found about the correlation between depression and Schadenfreude?
Okay. Well, what we were doing was measuring two things. Schadenfreude, which is the tendency to take pleasure in other people's misery. A real dark part of human nature, and what we call Freudenfreude. And we called it Freudenfreude. It's sort of a German-sounding term because we knew people knew the term Schadenfreude. And
right.
We thought, well, maybe Freudenfreude will catch on. And Freudenfreude is just a part of empathy that involves really getting thrilled and tremendous amounts of joy when people bring you their successes. So we measured both Schadenfreude, this tendency to take joy in the misery of others, and Freudenfreude, the ability to really enjoy other people's successes. And we measured those characteristics in people both in the US and also in Europe, and found that there was a relationship between those characteristics and both mild depression and actually also clinical depression in hospitalized people. People with depression showed low Freudenfreude, low ability to really take pleasure in other people's successes.
Yeah, I'm so happy for you.
Yeah.
And high Schadenfreude.
Guy got kicked in the nuts.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So low Freudenfreude and high Schadenfreude. And when I considered those two things in tandem, I thought, boy, that's a recipe for disaster in relationships. Mm-hmm. Because in tandem, those are toxic. If as a friend, you are almost showing a certain amount of giddiness or glee. And if you're asking for all the details and not letting the conversation move beyond a person's report of their failure, people start feeling uncomfortable and start feeling like, boy, you're almost way too interested in this bad time that I had.
Yeah.
So people stop talking about their vulnerabilities and their negative experiences if you're too high in Schadenfreude. And they stop bringing you their joys if you're too high. And I mean, if you're too low in Freudenfreude, and that combination just ends up depriving the relationship of the most important ingredients, I think, of friendship.
Anybody listening to this has experienced a time when they've brought a joy to a friend and the joy was not matched. I want to get into the benefits of Freudenfreude because I know there are many. Why do you think it is so natural for us to... Is it almost instinct to find pleasure in other people's pain? Or maybe it's just me. I am genuinely, listen, my kid got cut from the team. I kind of did a silent giggle when the team that he got cut from lost in the next game. But it made me feel like a terrible person. I acknowledged it right away.
It's not just you.
But I love the emotion of being happy for somebody. And it makes me, as somebody who's dealt with depression, happier. Am I just an awful, terrible person that it is, I have to like be aware of the Freudenfreude? Like I know I need to practice it more, and we're going to talk about ways that you have to practice it and build on this.
It's certainly not just you. I think Schadenfreude is probably a near universal tendency that humans have. In a lot of people, it comes naturally, in part because evolution rewarded us for being aggressive and competitive. You have to remember that when evolution was crafting our nervous systems way back, our ancestors were dealing with really tough times of scarcity.
Yeah.
It really was the case that there wasn't enough sustenance and there wasn't enough safety to go around.
So when somebody died or got eaten by a saber-toothed tiger or they ran out of food, then there's more food for you.
Yeah, and I've never stabbed wild boar, so my family wouldn't starve. But I'm convinced it would be exhilarating because our nervous system was built way back then.
Yeah.
When taking pleasure in being aggressive and savage and cruel made sense because it paid off for the species. Evolution also built some mirror neurons in our brains and some capacity for cooperation and caring, because obviously nurturing our young was also really important mm-hmm. for evolutionary success. So I'm not saying that humans were crafted to be terrible. It's not just that. We've got this potential for caring that also evolved. I would argue that humans have progressed to the point where now, arguably, we can do better.
Yes.
We really can have enough. We don't need to get stuck in a scarcity mindset that pits us against each other psychologically. But I think a lot of forces in society set people up to maintain that obsolete scarcity mindset.
Yeah, so it's really interesting. The way that you explained it evolutionarily really helps me understand it better, right? You call it a scarcity mindset. For me, when I'm looking at all of the times in my life when I've admittedly had Schadenfreude, it's been based around envy, which is it's the kind of scarcity you don't need, right? Like you're always wanting more, and ambition, which is if you're going to get ahead in life, if you're going to provide for your family, if you're going to get to a point where you can give them comfort and food and all these other things, you have to be not just good at something, but good comparatively at something. There it goes, right? If you have to be good comparatively at something, then someone else needs to be not as good as you at something. And that's where I get into trouble.
Well, but I mean, if you think about it, I mean, envy in and of itself can actually be a very good thing. Envy can be really useful. I mean, if you think of the times in your life when you were just hit, sometimes unexpectedly, by envy, when somebody reported having an experience or an accomplishment or even obtaining a thing, mm-hmm. you were hit by envy. Sometimes what's happening is there's something out there in this life that you really want that maybe you weren't even consciously aware that you wanted. Mm-hmm. And the value of envy, if you think about it, is that it informs you about this thing that really matters to you, you may or may not have been aware of. And if you can change your relationship with envy and start viewing it more in that informative way, it sort of takes the sting out of it and instead lets you kind of step back and say, boy, if that's what I'm feeling in response to this person's report of an accomplishment or a purchase or whatever it is, that's telling me that I'm that much closer to being able to really frame the most appropriate goals as I can for my life. And that's got to be one of the most valuable things going. So if you start looking at envy differently, it can be helpful.
We've talked about a lot of Schadenfreude and taking pleasure in other people's pain. Can you tell us the benefits of the opposite of Freudenfreude, of sharing in other people's joy? Tell me the benefits you've seen in practicing that emotion.
One of the benefits is totally selfish. It just expands your own experience of joy. As you go through your life, you're made happy by your own occasional victories and successes. That's swell. But if you can tune into the victories of other people and really imagine them in great detail, you can share in their positive experiences and multiply your own satisfaction that many more times. So selfishly, it ends up being a positive thing. In terms of how it affects the relationship, I mean, people will like you a lot more. People will love you if they know that you are someone who is rooting for their success, who is hoping to amplify their joy. And if you're someone who, on a regular basis, gives them a chance to relive their experiences with victory. And that's what you're doing when you pay attention within a conversation to somebody's success. And ask questions, you're giving them a chance to relive it. I mean, the silliest example, I suppose, is when somebody comes home from a vacation.
Yeah.
If you ask them to tell you about the whole thing, to go through it day by day, what did you eat? What did you see? What was it like? You're giving them a second vacation.
Yeah.
All right. So I have a story that's, first of all, this is all great in theory. And I'm just going to tell you a story. In high school, I was that guy. I was that ambitious guy. I wanted, I checked my class ranking, checked my GPA, wanted to get into that competitive college. You and I sound pretty similar there, Dr. Chambliss. I got to college and I let all that go. And I became genuinely happy for people around me. And it made me very popular. And because of that, I went out a lot and I went on academic probation twice. So I guess I need some help from you on, by the way, I had an awesome time in college. I regret nothing.
Would you do it again differently?
Yes, no, I would not. I would not do it again differently. But what I'd love to know is there any strategies on how best to practice Freudenfreud so you don't necessarily get into academic probation?
Without going into academic probation, yeah, how can we practice hearing in other people's joy?
Yeah. Again, I had an awesome time.
Yeah. I guess in my experience, relationships that are characterized by Freudenfreud don't put the brakes on achievement necessarily, because it can go the other way. I mean, what often ends up happening is if you've got a relationship where the two people involved are mutually cheering each other on, mm-hmm, then you both have more motivation to help the other achieve more. It's like in your marriage, mm-hmm, right? You have a cooperative marriage. You're constantly an example of how mutual Freudenfreud just helps you achieve more and more, because you set up this virtuous cycle where you're thrilled at seeing that the other person can achieve more and more, and you're rooting for them, and you're facilitating their work, and you're picking up the slack on other things when they're really working, mm-hmm, on a project. So I think it can be done.
Are there actionable ways people can act? You said asking about their vacation. I, mm-hmm, love that tip. What are other actionable ways people can put this in practice today? Because from what I'm hearing from you, when you are, the benefits of sharing in other people's joy is you yourself become less depressed. So you become a happier person when you get to share some of their joy. So what are some actionable ways people can today help share in other people's joy and feel this emotion?
Well, part of it just has to do with being more mindful in your interactions with other people and just tuning into the competitive juices that sometimes start flowing when people are talking about their successes or wonderful times. Mm-hmm. If you become more aware of the part of you that sort of threatens to bring down the Freudenfreud, mm-hmm, or God forbid, manifest Schadenfreude, that can help you pay more attention to how you pay attention.
Does it count if, and I feel like I see this in life a lot, if you're like, oh my gosh, I am so happy for you, to make them feel better, but deep down inside you're super jealous.
So you're faking it. Yeah, you're faking it a little bit.
I know. I'm sorry. I don't want to ever be that person, but I feel like that's better than just being an ass about it.
I think it is better. Yeah. I think especially people who are depressed often don't have a whole lot of energy.
Yeah.
It's hard for them to experience genuine joy. And I think one of the ways of applying some of our findings is to kind of recognize that sometimes you might not yet feel it deep, deep down, the Freudenfreud. But if you can at least go through the motions and fake it till you make it, that can actually end up jumpstarting this positive cycle. And I mean, that's true of a lot of things. When you're battling depression, it's hard to get outside and take a walk, or it's really hard to show up at a party. It just feels unbearably difficult, and you don't feel like your heart is in doing any of those things. But we know that just doing it is one of the best ways of trying to get out of a depressive funk. But one of the kind of routine suggestions to people who are dealing with depression is try acting a little bit more like you hope you'll be able to act once you're not depressed anymore. Huh. Try doing some of the things that you are hoping to be able to do once the therapy's over.
So say, I am so happy for you. I'm so happy that happened to you. I'm so, that can get the emotion started. So I've heard you say to seek out opportunities to be happy for someone. So we're more in tune to our own emotions. We're more aware of what they're saying. We're not interrupting her. We're asking them questions about their success to show interest. We're asking them about their vacation specifics. We're asking them to relive it. And then that way we get to share it. And then you can fake it even if you need to, because that will genuinely lead to it. And then,
and it'll be good for them.
Yeah, it'll be good for them.
That's the important part, right? Like, even if you're being a douche, you're helping the other person, and that's good. And then maybe that'll, like you said, that kind of kickstarts the process. I love that.
Yeah. And then finally, find a way to celebrate their success, even if it's small. So you're saying it doesn't, here's my thing with my girlfriends. We tend to commiserate, and a lot of our connection is based on, oh my gosh, can you believe this happened? Da 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 da. Like the it kind of this gossip circle. And I am actively trying to reframe. I want to hear, as women, we don't brag as much as we should about our wins. So should I be asking my girlfriends, especially, what's your win? Tell me, even if it's small, tell me like those things.
I think it's wonderful to do that. It also kind of makes sense that in a lot of friendships, commiserating is dominant, because commiserating is a wonderful way of dampening competition. Every time you kind of share a vulnerability and share experience with the defeat, you're not saying my life is superior and I've got it all together and I'm better than you. You're doing the opposite. You're saying I'm a hurting, flawed, vulnerable human being just like you are, and you can relax. Mm-hmm. You don't have to feel inadequate or inferior in any way. So a certain amount of that I don't think it's problematic, but I think you're absolutely right. It's great in relationships when you can find ways that you can effectively and supportively celebrate each other's even small successes. And I guess part of me thinks that in some ways, technology has made it easier than ever for us to celebrate small things. I mean,
look at you for finding the positive of technology.
Yes.
Like using emojis when you text. Yeah. I mean, you've got a billion wonderful little quick things that you can do to just say, hey, I'm on your team, and using like buttons. Now you can make the decision on social media to only use it as a force for the good, that you'll never say anything negative and you will only cheer people on, no matter how silly their photo might look. You're going to love it.
And I think that's, I've started to, because I've been obsessed and aware of this emotion, I've been trying to, every post I see of my friends, I've been trying to leave a positive comment of, you look so happy in this picture. Oh my gosh, where's that place? It looks so beautiful. So I'm actively trying to use social media this way, even if in person I can't make that connection.
And this is all such great advice. And Dr. Chambliss, I feel like we're going to walk away from this, and our listeners are going to walk away from this with a new mindset on the benefits of wishing the best for other people. As far as mastering that on social media, that might be an entirely different podcast. Like once you take a deep dig into the nature of social media, but I think that's a great practice that you have there as well, Kim.
Just the final thing I would add to how you can build your Freudenfreude, our research also showed that whenever you nurture other people, you make this whole thing easier. Because when you're in a nurturing relationship, when you're a parent or a mentor or a teacher or a therapist, or naturally kind of own some of the success that people bring you.
Yeah.
So the more you build nurturant relationships in your life, the more effortless it becomes to be a cheerleader.
I love that, because it's so instinctual. If something happens good for my children, I have... There's not an ounce of Schadenfreude I have with my children. I only want good. It's kind of like unbalanced, like the opposite. I only want positive things to happen for them. And it gets like, the farther you're out from my circle is where it gets a little murky.
I think a lot of people are the same way.
Yeah, I know. But isn't it weird though? It is weird that a complete stranger on the internet, I'm super happy for them, but I have had some instances where we've experienced some success, and we have friends, like you were explaining, that it was bizarre how not happy they were, and in fact came back with a negative. Is there a difference between like that friend, or is it too competitive when we know each other too well? Or every relationship's different.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the great gifts of millennials has been the term frenemy.
Yes. Yes.
I guess as parents, to inspect the part of ourselves that endorses the scarcity mindset and just takes it to be true. Because if you take the scarcity mindset as just a given, you're going to encourage hyper-competitiveness in your kids.
Yeah.
You're going to some extent compete with other parents through your children and use your children's competitive achievement as a way of feeling better about yourself and superior in your friendships. And I mean, that happens all the time. But if you want to try to short circuit that process, stepping back and saying, oh, wait a minute, is it just possible that with technology, are we at or can we get to a point where there truly will be enough and we can kind of set aside this old ancient scarcity mindset that really brings out the worst in our nature? It's work to kind of learn about what we can do to kind of help each other be better.
And the more we model that, and the more, even if we're faking it, I'm assuming our kids see that and they hope, hopefully can live it more authentically than we do. Well, I'm happy for you, Dr. Chambliss.
There you go.
I'm happy for you that you don't know her that well,
so it's easy to be happy. That's what we learned from this podcast.
Yeah,
right?
I don't know you that well. No, but your research is helping people because if we can share other people's joy, the happier we will be. We get to share in some of that. So thank you so much for your research and thank you for this conversation.
Well, thank you for the chance to talk with you. Take care.
Okay, Penn. So today, here's what I'm going to do. Here's my plan.
Okay.
I am going to go on social media and I've been trying to actively do this, but I think I need to allot time in my day to just go leave positive comments on people's posts. And also, what do you think about this? I always say like, oh, I'm going to get together with my friends. I'm going to be better about this. I think I want to have a hype night where I invite some girlfriends and we all go around and we brag on ourselves.
Yeah.
And we can be happy for each other.
Yeah.
That sounds like your worst nightmare?
No, this is you. This is you and your girlfriends, it sounds like.
Well, and we can have boyfriends too.
No, it's fine. So I've got my own plan of action.
What's your plan of action?
So I'm going to go to my friend Chris's house.
Oh, God.
Who said he didn't want to see the videos of me swimming with the turtles.
Oh, my gosh.
And I'm going to say, Chris, you're not cultivating a Freud mindset. I've got 6 hours of turtle footage that I'd like you to watch because when I was hanging out with them last, see, guys,
I was giggling.
Guys do this differently.
Oh, yeah. I was giggling when she was saying watch Vacations because tell him what Chris did.
Okay. He's like, how was Belize? He generally asks, how was Belize? I'm like, it was amazing. I had this swim in a GoPro with turtles. I got some amazing footage. He's like, really, really? Can I see it? And I was like, hang on, let me get it. And then I look and he's got this bleeping smirk on his face. And I'm like, you're joking, Archie. He's like, of course I'm joking. I don't want to see your photos and your pictures. Honestly, I think that's fine. Although I do think guys process these things a little bit differently.
Okay.
And we didn't talk about this much in the interview, but there are, when done correctly, there are some benefits to Schadenfreude. There was an article that I read about this that said it does sometimes allow people to align in social settings when they wouldn't normally even be able to connect with each other. I think as long as it's like a healthy thing, like,
well, at a basketball game.
Yeah, exactly that.
Yeah. That's...
But also like talking smack and like really enjoying watching other people talk smack to each other. Like that's kind of a thing that guys like doing. So that the whole vacation thing with Chris, to be honest with you, it was a funny moment that we both enjoyed, but I'm going to enjoy even more just going over to his house and
just doing like a screen cast.
I want him to, I'm definitely casting it onto his TV.
He has a big TV.
I'm going to engage in his misery.
Well, and that'll make you happy seeing how
miserable. So we're back at Schadenfreude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I just feel as if I love the emotion of being happy for other people and I need to do a better job of cultivating that.
Yeah.
And I think that I had discussions with both my kids this weekend, knowing we were doing this podcast and we were interviewing Dr. Chambliss. And I asked them, when is a time you have felt genuine joy for another person that you're not related to? And PC, when his friend made the school play, because it's very competitive.
Yeah.
So his friend made the school play and he said he was very pumped about that. And Lola had a lot of examples of her friends, you know, her friend Ava had a PR and a high jump at a track meet, and her friend Sophie did, I forget what Sophie did, but also something very impressive. So she has, and she has a good, I asked, like, from a girl's perspective, I'm like, do you have a safe place where you can share these joys and they do hype you up. And she said, yeah, she has good friends that do this. Because college admissions is coming up next year. And there's going to be times when people are going to get into school she doesn't, and she's going to have to fake some joy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, anyway. The science was useful to me, right? Yeah. Hearing that there are health benefits and there are ways to avoid depression, which is obviously something that people are discovering that they have in record numbers.
Yeah.
I would guess that it relieves stress. I would guess that a lot of those things happen when you really actively engage. And I want you to know, like I was just joking around a little bit. I think I take pleasure from my friend's pleasure probably in a different way. Maybe because I'm a dude. I don't know what it is. But I genuinely, it definitely makes me always feel good when someone who I know is happy.
I feel that too. And I think I came off in this episode a little bit like I want everybody to fail. Did that come off that way?
I don't know, but I guarantee you people will appreciate your honesty because everyone feels it a little bit.
Overwhelmingly, I do root for people.
Yeah.
But there are pangs of I'm a huge B.
Same.
Yeah.
Same. We're terrible.
We're terrible people. Anyway, I love you guys and I'm so happy for you. So what I would love to happen, we usually do a blog post that promotes these podcasts. In the comments, I want people to share what they're excited for or something, a trip they've gone on that they loved
and
or
a promotion.
Yep. And I'm going to hype you guys up.
We'll tell you how happy we are for you.
Yes. Because I selfishly want to be happier. So it's like volunteering. Like you volunteer to make yourself feel better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We could go super meta on this and say that all of this
is just so selfish.
Yeah. Is egotistical.
I know. We're just egotistical.
Let's not do that. Let's stick with the good stuff.
Okay. Okay. Love you. Bye.
Bye.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.